On Tech News Today, Google's smart contact lens may actually go on sale. Microsoft is laying off employees and making big changes, and the UK's list of hacking tools gets leaked. The best part is the code names, like Operation Swamp Donkey. We've got the details coming up right now.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, July 15th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin. Jason Howell is back.
Oh, I was here the whole time. I was just sleeping.
Yeah,
under the desk.
We discovered him in the back room on a giant beanbag chair. And when Padre went back there to take a nap, he discovered.
Oh, hey, there you are, Padre. I was so scared when that happened.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very strange turn of events. But we're glad he's awake now.
Yeah, and I'm glad to be awake, too. Let me tell you, there were 3 days there where I was not very awake.
Well, we're so glad to have you back. And
thank you.
Our co-anchor today and every Tuesday is the one and only Joe Panettiere. Hey, how's it going, Joe?
It's going great, Mike. Thanks for having me aboard, as usual.
Always great to have you on Tuesdays. You know, today is a special day for two reasons. The first is that Twitter was opened to the public 8 years ago on July 15, 2006. And a few days after it opened to the public, I don't know about you, but I went there, I looked around, I saw nothing, and then I wandered away for a year and didn't come back until it was too late. How about you? When did you sign up for Twitter?
I was almost going to say a quick answer, but a trick answer. My profile, I think, will say I signed up in 2011, but I think I've been on since about 2009 or 2008. Actually, 2008 is when we launched our business. So it was 2008. And, you know, it's interesting. Twitter is almost, you wonder if it's got that yogiism. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. I'm still on it all the time, but I know some people have tuned out, but thankfully a lot of the most influential readers are still following me out there.
Yeah. I like Twitter a lot. It's, I use it with Google Plus. I use it kind of as a feature of Google Plus. I use a service called Friends Plus Me, which automatically posts my Google Plus post, the top line of the Google Plus post to Twitter as a tweet. And then the link goes back to Google Plus where you can have a civil conversation. And I also occasionally post things directly to Twitter, and I interact with people on Twitter nowadays. Because so many of the people who watch and listen to this show are on Twitter and like to interact that way. So, what a story that the history of Twitter has been. So, very interesting, and happy birthday to the public version of Twitter. The other reason today is a special day is today is the last day to comment on the FCC's proposal for net neutrality. This is your last chance to tell Tom Wheeler what you think of his proposal. Now, very specifically, you've heard that it's an open question session. They essentially want you to answer one of three questions. The questions are, number one, should there be an outright ban on fast lanes, yes or no? Number two, should broadband access be classified as a Title II common carrier, yes or no? Now, what that means, that common carrier status means it would be like the phone service where they would be obligated to provide equal and open access to everybody, and it would be pretty heavily regulated under that designation. And number three, should the new open internet provisions also cover wireless? And if you answer yes to all three of these questions, that's the maximum pro net neutrality stance. If you answer no to all three questions, that's the maximum anti-regulation stance. Either way, if you go to the site to fill out the form to answer these questions, you probably won't get in because so many people are rushing in at the last minute to have their voice heard. So here's what you do. You send them an email. Your email will go in and be queued up, and you'll be counted that way. The email address is openinternet@fcc.gov. That's openinternet@fcc.gov. Send an email. Answer those three questions. Be constructive is my advice, and have your voice heard because this is it. It's going to go one way or the other, and once these rules are set, that's pretty much going to be the internet we're going to have in the United States. So that's why today is a very special day, last day. Well, let's jump into the news. Joe Panettiere and Jason Howell. Google announced a deal with the Swiss drug company Novartis to actually bring Google's smart contact lenses to market. Now, this seemed, Joe Panettiere, like an incredible moonshot. You know, contact lenses that kind of sort of might work like Google Glass, or, you know, might dispense drugs, or might detect the chemistry of the liquid in your eye and so on. It all sounds very science fiction-y, but here what's happening is that Google is actually licensing the technology they've been developing to this company so that the company can develop. Now, they're actually expecting prototypes that people will be able to try, not the public, but, you know, certain types of people, possibly the press, in about a year. So year and a half, something like that. And then they expect products on the market within, you know, 5 years or so.
Sounds like the future's now, though. I mean, yeah. You know, on the one hand, some of these things sound so far-fetched when we first hear them. But on the other hand, if you begin to connect the dots between what Google is doing and then some other major research we're hearing out in the market, for instance, I think it was just yesterday we heard about some new tests that to determine if you're likely to get Alzheimer's. Some of those tests will involve testing your eyes. You could almost imagine these sensors now being early warning systems for all types of diseases you may develop later on in life, just based on wearing these sensors. So it's exciting, but once again, you know, you always have those privacy concerns saying, okay, now we're going to collect even more data, and where's that data going? So that's a little intimidating, but as usual, I hope open markets sort it all out.
Yeah. Now, the first one that they're really talking about is a contact lens that monitors blood sugar levels. Again, this is a pharmaceuticals company, and they have these little tiny sensors that are built into the contact lens. And then, to me, the more impressive feat is that they have tiny antennas in these contact lenses, thinner than a human hair, that wirelessly transmit the data, presumably to a smartphone or some other kind of device. And that's pretty amazing that something that's right on the surface of your eye is actually connecting wirelessly to another device. Now, there's another version they're talking about that actually corrects vision. It's like the lenses on an autofocus camera, and it would actually be able to detect what you're trying to focus on so that when you're looking at something up close, it would know that you're looking at something close. And if you look off in the distance, it would know that, and it could make changes, mechanical changes or other changes to the lens itself to automatically focus depending on what you're looking at. Wow, that's pretty interesting, and you could see how that would be a very popular item and be like bifocals for contact lenses or something like that. Now, of course, this is going to Novartis's Alcon Eye Care division, and they are just licensing Google's technology. And one of the interesting things about this, of course, is that this technology, the idea of having these smart you know, these smart electronics, different things you can do with electronics inside contact lenses, is the brainchild of Babak Parviz. Now, we reported yesterday on that on this show that Babak Parviz is moving to Amazon. He's quitting Google and moving to Amazon the day before Google announces a licensing agreement to actually take his technology and sell it and essentially productize it. That sounds to me, Joe Panettiere, and again, this is not based on any inside information or sources or anything like that. Just the timing of it.
Let's speculate, shall we?
Yeah, let's speculate. It's the timing of it is really one day. Come on, I mean, Parviz has been working on this technology for two decades at least, and one day after he announces his departure, Google announces this license agreement. Sounds like he was against it.
Either against it, or maybe it's Google's way of saying, hey, you know, the technologies we develop are bigger than any one person. You know, the whole idea being people are going to come and go, but our R&D continues, our relationship building efforts are going to continue. And hey, we're not going to skip a beat as he walks out the door.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in just a sec, we're going to find out what's going on at Microsoft. Big changes afoot in Redmond. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace. Squarespace, of course, is the best place in the world to build a website. And, you know, the thing about Squarespace is there's so much you can do. There's so many powerful features. And people know it as a site where you can build these really incredible websites for any purpose at all. But did you know that Squarespace is the very best place to build a blog? That's what I've been using Squarespace for a long, long time. Jason, could you go to like my wife's blog, for example? It's called SpartanDiet.org. She's been working on a book for a few years called The Spartan Diet. And so she's been blogging there on and off. It's also going to end up being the the website for her, you know, how you can buy the book and follow her newsletter and all these kinds of things. It's been in the works for quite a while. But if you scroll down, you can see that this is a beautiful blog, simple, minimalist, elegant. And this was put together, like, it was so easy to put together because of Squarespace's blogging. They have layout engine-based editing, markdown support, post by email. I love the idea that you can post a blog post by email. You send an email, and that becomes a blog post. Fantastic. Not many website and blog hosting platforms can do that. It has RSS syndication, geotagging, and so much more. Mobile apps that are provided by Squarespace make it super easy to update your blog while you're out and about. And the Squarespace blogging platform supports a configurable sharing button, letting visitors share content on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, LinkedIn, StumbleUpon, Reddit, Pinterest, and Tumblr. Absolutely important for you to promote your blog posts on social media. It has entry scheduling. Everybody loves this feature. Entry scheduling lets you schedule entries to be published in the future. So you can say, you know what? I'm going to create the post now. I'm going to finish it now, but I want it to be posted tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Really, really powerful. RSS blocks make it easy for visitors to add your feed to their newsreader by adding a subscribe button anywhere on your website, and you determine where that button goes. And you can publish blog entries with multiple author attribution, which is another great feature because oftentimes you're going to collaborate on blog posts. You can set blog post entries to publish, draft, scheduled, and needs review, so you can sort of manage it. It's like a content management system that's very easy to use and very powerful and reliable. In addition, Squarespace offers podcast support, Google Author Rank. You want to do Google Author Rank because that establishes and demonstrates to the public that you are who you say you are. It has category and tag support, customizable URLs, and simple likes. Squarespace is super, super easy to use. But if you need help, live chat and email support is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Squarespace starts at just $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for your 2-week trial. It's free, and no credit card is required. Start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and it'll actually get you 10% off the already very low price, and it'll also be a way for you to show your support for Tech News Today, and we appreciate that. And we also thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Big changes at Microsoft. Joe, what's going on?
Yeah, you know, there are a few things going on. And if you wrap it all together, as you point out, it adds up to big changes. So we think the other shoe's about to drop over at Microsoft. Now, last week we had CEO Satya Nadella. He was sharing his vision in a memo, and he was suggesting in that memo major changes were coming. Now, fast forward to this week, and Microsoft is expected to announce thousands of job cuts. And these job cuts come amid the accelerated push towards a cloud and mobile first initiative. And you know what, Mike? There may be even another acquisition in the pipeline. But let's start with those layoffs. And I don't think there's any shocking news here. I'd even argue that Steve Ballmer probably had his fingerprints on this early on. And now it's up to Satya, the new CEO, to shape it in his own vision and execute on it. And the Seattle Times is reporting that the cuts will be roughly 6,000 to maybe 12,500 jobs. Now, Mike, that represents about 5 to 10% of the workforce. And Mike, it sounds like no surprise here that most of the cuts will likely involve the Nokia mobile phone business. And we should start to get answers when Microsoft announces earnings by July 22nd. But those cuts could come as soon as this week. Now, Mike, I know you've been watching sort of the mobile business with Microsoft, all the devices that Nokia has been developing. Do you see signs of momentum there? Do you see any hope that this acquisition can show some momentum even as these job cuts continue to roll out?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. And it's really interesting to see Microsoft, which, of course, historically has been strongly associated, probably more strongly associated than any other company, with desktop software.
Right.
And so they've been talking about the cloud and mobile and the internet and all these things for a long time. And nobody, I think, really took them seriously. I think it always felt like it was kind of like too little, too late. They're kind of like going along with the trends. They see they're losing money to Google, et cetera. And so they're saying all these things. What's different now, I think, is that Satya Nadella is really hardcore about cloud and mobile. So hardcore that in his manifesto that he published the other day, the letter to employees, he was really driving it hard, and just, you barely mentioned the W word and the O word, Windows and Office. And it was really, really about, genuinely about mobile and cloud. And he's just really making serious efforts in that direction. He's also trying to be the empowerment company, which is really great, and the platform company, which is also really great.
Right.
But by productivity, they're not saying, "Oh, office equals productivity." He's not saying that.
Right.
And by empowerment, you know, he's talking specifically about the individual as a consumer and also as a person who has a job. And he wants Microsoft to look at each customer as two people with two lives.
Right.
And that's a really interesting thing. But I do believe that Microsoft is going to get some serious momentum in mobile. They're doing all the right things. They haven't squashed the Android phone that they inherited from Nokia, which is a great sign. Their Office for iPad that they announced recently is top-notch. They weren't holding back. So that's really the difference now.
Right.
I guess to summarize what I'm saying is that Microsoft is not holding back when it comes to being more cross-platform, being more mobile, and being more cloud-centric. They're really going for it. And I think once you focus the company in that direction, they're likely to succeed far better than they have in the past.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I don't think it's the way Microsoft thinks about the market now. It's not about protecting their installed base. It's about innovating across multiple systems. And I don't want to choose to say Microsoft looks exactly like IBM of the 1990s, but there are some parallels. Think about IBM. They retreated from the desktop in the 1990s. They got out of the PC business in the early 2000s, and they created this great stronghold on the server, in the applications markets, in data centers. Think about Microsoft. Listen, they're not going to retreat from the desktop, but what they are saying is, look at our momentum in cloud. Some of these stats this week out of the Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference, which is a major event in Washington, D.C., Microsoft is saying Windows Azure, more than 57% of Fortune 500 companies are leveraging the Azure cloud now, and that cloud is storing 30 trillion objects, which is incredible numbers. Now, we need some revenue numbers to go along with that to really understand just how much momentum there is and what the installed base is. But I think Microsoft's cloud momentum is seriously underestimated by the media, Wall Street, and customers. I think they are now neck and neck with Amazon and may even leapfrog Amazon at some point. Mobile, I'm still curious to see how it plays out. I think you're right. I give them credit with what they're doing with Nokia so far. But I'd like to see and hear a little bit more about how Surface 3 is doing so far. You and I beat up on Microsoft just a little bit when they announced that special promotion about switching MacBook Air users over to Surface 3. And I'd like to hear how that's going, because I was highly skeptical when it was first announced.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, there are two versions there. I'm sorry. There are two areas where I would love to see Microsoft really start going for it. One of them is that, as you know, Joe, Microsoft has always had a killer research and development arm, Microsoft Research.
Yes.
And they generate incredible technology after incredible technology. They have great intellectual property, and then you never see these things in products. There's sort of this huge disconnect between what they invent and what they ship. Now, they ship a lot of stuff that is really good, that has a lot of invention in it, but the big, big ideas that they've been developing in Microsoft Research for so many years have trouble seeing the light of day, and for whatever reason, I don't know, maybe these things are considered too expensive or whatever, but one area where Microsoft clearly can own the future is in the area of touch desktop. And what I mean by that is Microsoft has two properties. One of them is called Perceptive Pixel. It's a company they acquired. If you remember the elections from 2008 or whenever it was, when
right,
CNN...
The massive screens, right?
The big screens, the big touch screens.
Yep.
Okay, that's Perceptive Pixel, Jeff Hahn's company, which Microsoft acquired. That's great stuff. And, of course, the sort of tabletop interface that Microsoft used to call Microsoft Surface... It was a great name for that, by the way.
Yeah, the original Surface.
Now they call it Pixel Sense, right? So they own the two biggest... technologies or products, I guess, that essentially I believe that's the future of desktop computing. I think we're all going to have gigantic screens that are touch screens that are very highly interactive with voice, that interact with objects, that recognize objects. For example, you put your physical keyboard on the screen, because essentially it's a table that's at a slight angle, like a drafting table.
Right.
You put your keyboard on it. It knows there's a keyboard. It pops up a document instantly right on top of the keyboard, and you can sit there and as soon as you get rid of the keyboard, you get rid of the document, move things around. Microsoft owns that. Not only own that, they own tons of research around that. For example, all kinds of gestures that combine touch with pen. That's the future of desktop computing, and Microsoft owns it. Where is it? I don't care if it costs $7,000. Ship something and stake your claim to the future of desktop computing.
Yeah, you know, and building on your CNN theme with those big screens, we often see now the big tabletop screens where multiple anchors are now navigating around that tabletop during a report and touching on various news sources, or maybe it's a geographic map, et cetera. I hate to say it, and my wife's not going to like to hear it, but I'd love to have one of those in my own house where you gather around a digital table and share information with the family. Now, Lenovo tried to do that. They had a nice, I think it was a 27-inch screen, Windows 8-based tabletop, but they didn't market it very well. And they also added their own.
We're having some trouble with your Skype connection there, Joe. We'll hope that it recovers here.
It just didn't deliver the goods. So I'd love to see Microsoft go in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the obvious I'm seeing a lot in the chat room of skepticism about my claim that Microsoft could own the future of the desktop, and that these touch tables that I'm talking about are the future. Yeah, it's hard to imagine because nobody has really shipped it yet. But once if you've seen the demos, if you've seen the examples that exist out there, the form factor is essentially this. You have a flat screen, a very flat screen, about the size of a big screen TV. And if it's flat, like you're talking about, Joe, it's a family game center. It's a breakfast table where you have data and your newspaper pops up on the surface of the table. It's an all-purpose computer for any purpose. Then you tilt it up at a drafting table angle, and it's your work computer where you can move documents around, talk to it mostly. The main interface is voice, just like mobile. But there's also a touch interface and a pen interface, and then you put it up flat, and it becomes a TV. It becomes a presentation thing. It becomes a George Jetson video phone. It becomes an all-purpose thing. If you can imagine that kind of product, you can imagine what I believe is going to be the future of every office and every home. Why would we have dumb TV? Why does everybody accept dumb TVs when we could have smart TVs that are multi-purpose? TVs are just screens that should be delivering content from the internet. That's it. Why not put them to work doing all these other things? Anyway, Microsoft is way ahead on the intellectual property for that. That's all I'm saying. I don't think they should abandon that in favor of just mobile in the cloud. The desktop is actually pretty exciting if they would get busy on that next user interface. The current WIMP user interface, Windows icons, menus, and pointing devices, 35 years old already. It's dead. It's over. Move on. It's all touch now. So we need to get behind this vision and Microsoft's the one we're essentially waiting for. And if they don't move, Apple's going to do it for sure, and they will own it if they really get in there first. So we'll see how that goes. Well, Joe, a list of hacking tools used by the UK's version of the NSA has been apparently leaked online. The tools suggest the ways that the UK's government communications headquarters, which is better known by its initials GCHQ, could fix the outcome of online polls, find and use Facebook photos, and so much more. And as you might expect, the information was part of the Edward Snowden trove of leaked documents, and it was published by the site The Intercept in an article written by Glenn Greenwald. Of course, Joe Panettiere, Glenn Greenwald is the guy to whom Edward Snowden primarily leaked those documents. He's the journalist who was interviewing Snowden in that famous interview in the Hong Kong hotel room. And he wrote this article. It's quite an interesting thing. It's really what's interesting about it is just it's a laundry list of capabilities. And right. Those capabilities are pretty obnoxious. Things like, you know, swaying online polls, that, you know, it's cheating, underhanded kind of things that this seems to suggest.
Yeah. You know, I think the other thing it suggests is right now with the NSA, it seems like it's the USA against the world on so many fronts when it comes to privacy. You know, last week we had the CIA representative thrown out of Germany. And this is the latest example of, you know what, I'm not saying that the U.S. is less guilty. I'm just saying every country may be just as guilty as the U.S. with these various spying tools. And can you trust anyone anymore, regardless of what country you're living in or what passport you're holding?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are countries that consider themselves players on the global stage, like the United States, like Russia, like China, who are kind of unfettered in their global reach and how they do espionage and how they do cyber espionage and all these kinds of things that the NSA does. And then there are other companies, like you mentioned, Germany, which do not consider themselves global in scale, have histories that put all kinds of shackles, self-imposed shackles. There's this very tense relationship between the German and the American espionage organizations, whether it's the CIA or the NSA or whatever, and the German equivalents, because the Germans are like, oh, we want to play by the rules. We want to keep this super limited. We want to focus it on these narrow things. And the U.S. is like, we want every capability we can get because we got big problems globally that we have to deal with. And Germany, we want your help. And Germany's like, no, we're not giving you our help. So that's one big source of the conflict. Right. Now, one of the fun things about this, by the way, and I just can't help but go through some of these, are the...
Yeah, we have to have some fun. Otherwise, it's very depressing. There's got to be some fun here, Mike.
The fun part, of course, as always, is the code names. And, right. You know, just the code names alone are worth the Snowden revelations as far as I'm concerned. Swamp Donkey. How's that right. for a code name? Swamp Donkey is a way to send modified Excel spreadsheet documents that silently extracts and runs malware on the target's computer. You don't want to encounter the Swamp Donkey. That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
I thought that was built into Excel, but I guess this is a new feature.
That's right. There's Spring Bishop, a tool to find private pictures of targets on Facebook. I don't know. I don't even want to know why they called it Spring Bishop. Glitterball. Glitterball. It sounds like, I don't know, some kind of movie or something. It's software to help agents carry out operations in Second Life. This is another fascinating aspect to this, that GCHQ actually has developed technologies that enable them to carry out operations in virtual environments like Second Life. It's like they're just really embracing everything the digital world has to offer. Now, Jason, here's one for you. Angry Pirate.
Great, thanks.
Angry Pirate is a tool to permanently disable a target's account on their computer. So, you know, you're
I don't know why.
It gives you limited vision, Jason.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, keep an eye on it, Jason.
All right.
We will, you know, I mean, the keywords go on and on. This is just miniature hero, the ability to source real-time call records, instant messaging, and contact lists from Skype. So this whole call, I'm sure, is being recorded by the GCHQ. And wow, underpass.
You know what? I see a conspiracy theory here. You know, the fate of the free world is at stake. Yeah. We're all worried about privacy, and instead we're talking about some great code names here. It's almost like they came up with the code names just to keep the media light and soft about this story rather than really digging in, because it's serious stuff, but the code names are a hoot, I must admit.
Well, speaking of names, Apple has been using a name for one of its features, and they wanted to trademark it, and it didn't go so well, did it?
No, it didn't. So, you know, Apple and Touch, Touch and Apple. It sounds like the two go together like, you know, America and apple pie, but maybe not quite. Apple's been trying to trademark that term Touch ID and Touch ID technology, but it turns out Kronos Technology Systems may have the last laugh here, because the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has declined Apple's effort to trademark that term Touch ID, basically saying that the effort is a lift or a ripoff. They didn't use the term ripoff, I did, of the Kronos Touch ID technology. And, you know, it's the latest latest example of Apple trying to develop and protect intellectual property, but it's also that gray area where just how much of this stuff is proprietary to Apple rather than owned by other companies or out to be freely used by third parties.
It seems to me that they could license the name from Kronos. There's a lot of options here. They could continue to use it as a non-trademarked term. It's pretty descriptive. They could also use the name that almost everybody used to call the iPod Touch. People used to call it the iTouch.
The iTouch.
That could be a name for this feature. They have lots of options here, but it is kind of surprising because usually Apple gets their way when it comes to trademarking things. So it's really interesting that they were rebuffed over this one.
Yeah. You know, and don't forget, the iPhone was not Apple's trademark originally. Cisco Systems actually owned the iPhone trademark originally. And the two, they went to a quiet war to work out Apple taking over the trademark. So there is a history here of Apple getting what it wants, and they've got a big war chest to do so.
Crucial Wax in the chat room is saying that Logitech owns the iTouch trademark. We should check into that. And also Cisco is, you know, what people are saying. Somebody's saying something weird. But yeah, it's really interesting, and this is going to be a big deal because, I mean, Apple, how much marketing has Apple already invested in the Touch ID trademark? If you go to their website, it's all over. It's all branded. They got the typography, everything. So yeah, this is a big deal for Apple, I think.
Yeah, you know, they've got 6 months to address this. It sounds like they have up until November 7th to go back to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and say, hey, we've made adjustments here. Here's our new terminology and why our mark is unique. Or by that date, November 7th, they could strike some sort of deal with Kronos. But don't forget, Kronos has held this trademark apparently since, I think, 2003. So we're talking 11 years of history here. If I'm doing my math correctly on the fly.
Yeah, so, they have had it for quite a while, and so we'll see where this goes. Again, I think my guess is the most likely outcome is that Apple licenses it, and Kronos gets paid, and everybody wins. So we'll see where that goes. Well, Google, Freescale, Samsung, ARM, and a few other companies announced today their intentions to develop a standard for wireless connectivity between Internet of Things devices. The initiative is called Thread. And the idea is to use mesh networking, which enables each device to both connect to and also relay the messages of other Internet of Things devices. Now, some commentators are saying that, here we go, another Internet of Things standard. And that's true. This is yet another one. However, this one could be complementary and work with some of the other standards that have been invented, because this is all about low-powered radio technology. And it's about mesh networking, which is a great idea for Internet of Things devices. What do you think? Do you think this will become the dominant standard? Does this have a chance with Google's backing, Joe?
I think they really just need to clarify how this technology works with Wi-Fi, with Bluetooth, et cetera, so that you're not confusing the market and feeling like, oh my gosh, all these investments I've already made are now antiquated. So I think Google will do a good job at that and really articulate the story. The other piece to remember is mesh networking already exists in Wi-Fi, in municipal wireless buildouts, for instance. So cities that have wireless networks, Wi-Fi networks, chances are they're using a mesh approach. And another term that you'll hear thrown about from Oracle and others is grid computing. It's a bit dated now, but everything old is new again. So I think this mesh approach hopefully will leverage the best of what we know about Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, et cetera, and build upon that. But I do worry when we get into these standards wars, because there was a standard last week announced, and I forget the companies involved, but it was not this group. So now you've got different camps promoting different Internet of Things standards, which can be a little scary, but we always go through these evolutions with new technologies.
You mentioned that mesh networking is out there. It's also surprisingly built into iOS 7. It's Apple's technology, which is called the multi-peer connectivity framework, and it enables mesh networking directly from any sort of iOS 7 device. So that's really interesting. One of the things I like about this Thread standard is that it's based on existing radio technology called 6LoWPAN. And that's the right way to do things, is to embrace existing standards.
Right.
The other sort of standard bodies that have emerged very recently, I think last week, is the Qualcomm-backed AllScene Alliance.
That was the one. Yep.
And the Intel-backed Open Interconnect Consortium. Now, the Thread initiative is about radio networking. AllScene and IOC are application layer technologies, and they could work together. They have to choose to work together. And we here at Tech News Today are urging them to work together, because the last thing we need are incompatible standards for the Internet of Things, because if that happens, there will be no Internet of Things. It'll be there'll be things, and there'll be the Internet. And
the Internet of Islands, yeah.
That's right. That's right. Well, let's talk about this one more story, and then we're going to go into a really stunning customer support call. And if you haven't heard it, it's going to blow your mind. But first, what's happening in India? There seems to be some kind of, I guess you could call it, an arms race between teenagers and parents over.
Yeah, there's an arms race. And the one thing I would ask is, for anyone listening or watching this broadcast, please do not loop in my wife and kids about this, because we don't want to shift the power from my wife to my kids.
It's our little secret
at home. It's our little secret. So let me set the picture on the story, Mike. My wife and I have three sons. Two of them are teenagers, and they're iPhone users, right? And my wife uses tracking software. My kids are aware of this. My wife uses tracking software to make sure my kids aren't misbehaving online with those iPhones, et cetera. But what, Mike, what if there was a new way for my kids to hide their digital footsteps from my wife? That seems to be exactly what's going on in India. And now everyone's wondering, wow, is this capability going to come to the States and U.S. shores? The app is called Hike Messenger. That's H-I-K-E Messenger. And it's developed by Bharati Software. I think I got that right. It's B-H-A-R-T-I. It's free software. It's backed by Japan's SoftBank, wow, which we know is a powerhouse, right? And some folks see it as a potential rival to WhatsApp. And I think there are some cultural issues here at stake, particularly in India, where you think about the nucleus, the core family, but then the extended family, aunts, uncles, distant relatives. Those India teenagers tend to link with all those folks online, and now they're looking for a way to hide their updates from those relatives. And this app may do it, Mike. So curious, is this something your household would be interested in, or not here, not now, not in my backyard?
Well, fortunately, my sons are grown up. They're adults now, and I have absolutely no control over them. Not that I had any control over them when they were teenagers. But yeah, this is really interesting. And as you pointed out, there's been technology for parents to monitor kids, not only online behavior, but also their driving. Lots of technologies out there that haven't been super popular, but they've been an option for parents, and they're increasingly going more mainstream. But you know what? Young people write code too. And so now I think we're going to see a huge wave of these kinds of apps, whether Hike is the actual product or not. I'm certain that that's the trend going forward for young people's use of messaging. You see this flight that everybody talks about from Facebook. That's what that was all about. It was all about getting away from relatives so that you could have a private conversation with your friends. And they went to Snapchat, and turns out Snapchat wasn't really as secure as everybody thought. And so you would see this devolution from the big all-purpose social networks down to these little messaging apps. And now, you know, maybe the WhatsApps of the world aren't secure enough or private enough from parental eyes as people want. So inevitably, I think there's going to be a way for teens and young people to be able to chat privately. And you know there's going to be a backlash software that enables parents to hack those very apps one way or the other. So the arms race continues. And wow, what a development. But it's super popular. And the other thing that's interesting about this is there's a big video mainstream commercial blitz that's like really
big
promoting
push.
This. Yeah, it's like on fire in India that everybody's talking about this. So that's a very, very interesting development. Well, in just a sec, we're going to tell you about a nightmare call to customer support to a company that you may have heard of. But first, I want to tell you about Personal Capital. Personal Capital is the way to get your finances in order. There are two barriers to growing your wealth and getting your money situation up, all put together the way you want it. The first barrier is that it's hard to keep track of everything. You've got accounts all over the internet, in this place, in that place, different passwords. They're scattered, and you can't really intuit what's going on with your own money. And Personal Capital will help you with that because they put it all onto a single screen. That's right. It takes all your different account information and shows you intuitive visual charts that allow you to have an intuitive sense of exactly what's happening with your money. Not just an intuitive sense, but also a very particular dollars and cents view of exactly what's going on. And the second way that they help you, the second barrier they help you overcome, is that you have to pay people to help you manage your financial situation, and you're almost certainly paying too much. And Personal Capital shows you how much you're overpaying and shows you how to reduce those fees. You get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. Personal Capital announced the integration of its award-winning app with Android Wear, Google's smartwatch platform. The update is available for download from the Google Play Store. The Watch app seamlessly integrates with Personal Capital on other Android devices and provides users with relevant and timely updates on their finances wherever and whenever they need it. There's no reason to wait. Signing up takes just a minute, pays big dividends immediately. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and total transparency so you can make better decisions about your own money. It's your money. Personal Capital is free, won't cost you anything. They'll save you money directly, but then they'll help you get control over your own finances. So set up your free account. Go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Personal Capital is free, and it's the smart way to grow your money. But you must go to personalcapital.com/TNT. That's personalcapital.com/TNT. Well, in other news, former Engadget editor-in-chief and current AOL executive Ryan Block tried to cancel his Comcast service. Sounds simple enough and straightforward enough, but instead of simply canceling, the customer service representative essentially refused to cancel it, giving him instead a super intense sales pitch as to why canceling was a horrible idea. Block recorded the last 8 minutes of the call and posted the audio to his SoundCloud account. Let's have a listen to some of this. It's really unbelievable.
A second for your internet. Astound will not give you that speed.
Okay, we'd like to disconnect. We'd like to disconnect, please.
Okay, so why is it that you don't want the faster speed? Help me understand why you don't want faster internet.
Help me understand why you can't just disconnect us.
Because my job is to have a conversation with you about keeping your service, about finding out why it is that you're looking to cancel the service.
My job is to troll you into keeping your service.
You can definitely go into the Comcast store and disconnect your service there. Okay.
You're just asking for you to...
Kill two birds with one stone. You got to return that cable card to the store anyways.
We're actually going to just mail the cable card in, but if you can just please cancel our service, that would be great. That is all we want.
We're actually not able to return a cable card by mail.
Oh, my God.
I will send someone like a Task Rabbit to go return the cable card for us. I don't personally intend to return the cable card. That's why we're probably not going to be canceling in store. So that's why I need you to cancel by phone. So can you cancel us by phone? The answer is yes, correct?
I mean, it sounds like you don't want to go over this information with me. I mean, if you're not wanting to go over that information...
That's what it sounds like to me, too.
Oh, my goodness.
You're the problem, not us. We can all identify with this, and that's why it's painful.
Yeah. So just to put this into context, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the company that's about to get a chokehold over the majority of internet connections in the United States of America. That's Comcast. And once their merger gets approved, they're going to pretty much be in charge of what you get, how you get it, how fast it is, and whether you can stop getting it. And so, man, what a deal that is. And of course, Comcast responded that they're shocked that this was going on, and
they were shocked that this person wanted to cancel the service.
They said they're going to personally call Ryan Block and apologize, and then tell him, what, you don't want this service? Come on.
Isn't this a great connection? Why would you want to turn it off?
Man, I'm so glad. Right. And so that was just the call was outrageous. It was so outrageous that Ryan Block somehow recorded the call, but he only recorded the last 8 minutes. You should listen to the whole thing. It's really quite alarming. And man, I'm so glad he posted that. People really, you know, I think the one mistake they made was that they happened to have a high profile, influential customer. And I guess this was bound to happen one way or the other. So now they have a PR nightmare on their hands right when they need approval from the authorities in Washington for their merger. Well, that is the tech news today. Later on today, Intel and Yahoo report their earnings. There should be some interesting information coming out of that. Joe Panettiere, I want to thank you for coming on, as you always do on Tuesday. Thank you so much.
All right, Mike, thank you. Jason, thank you as well. I appreciate the time today.
All right. Well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today on iTunes, YouTube, Feedly, Yahoo, RSS, many other options. Choose your favorite at twit.tv/TNT. And please follow us on Twitter. Just go to our Twitter handle, Tech News Today TV, and follow us. You can join our Google Plus community and also circle our page. Just search Google Plus for Tech News Today. And please send us your thoughts and opinions. Comment on Twitter or Google Plus using the hashtag Tech News Today, and we'll find it. Also, don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight. And every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.